I'm joining you from Bloomington. I work at the Indiana Institute on Disability and Community, and we are still working remote. Most of our office, we have 60 some employees. We don't have any plans to return to our office until probably in the fall when the students return. And I'm going to be talking with you a little bit today about the Indiana Institute on Disability and Community, and specifically one of the projects that we do, ADA Indiana. And I mentioned to Barbara that I do have a PowerPoint that I'm using, and I'm going to be sharing that with her for her to pass along to you via your share folder for your meeting. And feel free to contact me if you have any questions or any of the information is not readily available to you. I'd be happy to help with that. But as I mentioned, I work at the Indiana Institute on Disability and Community. We are a research affiliate with IU Bloomington. And we're located a little off campus. We're in the area where they are building the new IU Bloomington Hospital and the Academic Research Center. So we're very happy that that's coming over to our neighborhood. And we kind of it's not like we're there a lot. There are a lot of interesting buildings up there, but a lot of the facilities around us have always been more of the like the data centers and related to technology. So we're really excited about the Regional Academic Center coming over there because one of our mission at the Institute is to work with communities to welcome, value, and support the meaningful participation of people of all ages and abilities through research, education, and service. And so at the Institute, we do a lot. We have various faculty who are doing research in the area of disability. And we have students coming in and out, depending on the semester, who are doing their education, and they can come from a variety of disciplines. We have social work students, public health. At my center, we have two PhD public health students. And so we can have a variety of students from all types of disciplines. And then service is the last part of our mission. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Institute, but I'm just going to give you kind of the basic information. And certainly, I would be happy to take questions about that if you want some clarification. But the Indiana Institute, we were created by the Developmental Disabilities Act, which was passed, it's passed in the 70s and then renewed and created what we refer to ourselves as the University Center for Excellence in Developmental Disabilities. They call it in our field the USED. That's a great acronym. And sometimes I forget what all those letters stand for. But again, as I mentioned, that kind of there are some core functions that we're funded through the federal government. We get funding through the Administration for Community Living, through the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And it's the same money that funds the, here in our state, the Indiana Governor's Council for People with Disabilities and Indiana Disability Rights. Some of you may know them as the Indiana Protection and Advocacy Services. They renamed a couple of years ago. And then also we're also with the Administration for Community Living, which also funds the Independent Living Network here in our state, or partially funds it. Some of those centers receive state funding, but that's kind of what we consider ourselves part of this DD network in Indiana, and each state has one. So each state would have there's like 67 USEDs throughout the United States. Each state has a DD council, a Developmental Disabilities Council, and each state has a protection advocacy services. And while a lot of these are these institutes, these centers, these organizations are kind of built around the developmental disabilities, I would say that we probably do a lot more in terms of serving people and organizations who are supporting people with intellectual and developmental disabilities in our state. But we have not limited ourselves to that work. And so we do a lot in terms of, I'll talk about what we've been doing with our ADA Indiana project, and that will kind of give you some idea. But, there at our institute, we take what we call a lifespan approach. And so as you would walk around the institute, we have like several centers, and each one of these centers has their own staffing and their own priorities, and many of them have additional funding sources from the state of Indiana and other federal sources. And so as you would walk around the institute, you would find that we have an early childhood center, and as you might imagine, they do a lot of work with early childhood issues. They provide a lot of training and technical assistance for our First Steps program here in our state. We have the Center for Education and Lifelong Learning. They do a lot of work supporting teachers, not just in special education, but also in general education, doing a lot of instruction around universal design for learning and other projects that focus on how teachers can do better in the classroom, serving a variety of students, whether they have disabilities or not. We have the Center for Community Living and Careers. They do a lot of work with training, voc rehab. They do a lot of work around the waiver support. That's where the community living comes in. And then we have very specialized centers, the Indiana Resource Center for Autism. That's a very popular center that's been in operation for decades. They're very well known in our state. As you can imagine, they provide information and technical assistance primarily around families who have children with autism or on the spectrum. We have a relatively, our two kind of new centers, I would say. They've only been around for maybe, I say 5 years. That's kind of new in terms of this institute, which has been there for since the 70s. But the two new centers, the Center for Collaborative Systems Change, they do work around doing a lot of things behind the scenes, evaluations for various organizations and projects, whether it's within the university or with other organizations. And then you have my center where I work, the Center for Health Equity. And before we were the Center for Health Equity, a lot of our staff worked for the Center for Aging and Community. Dr. Phil Stafford, who's very well known here in the Bloomington area, and his advocacy work for livable communities. He did a lot of work with aging and aging in place issues, and he kind of brought that expertise to the institute 15 or so years ago. And he retired a few years ago, and that led our institute to think about, wow, we need to, we're going to be having this great regional health academic center, IU Help Bloomington, over here. And we thought it was a great opportunity to have a center that was focused specifically on health issues and people with disabilities. So that's how the Center for Health Equity came to be. And we were very lucky to be able to recruit Dr. Jay Chu Lee, who's done a lot of work at various universities throughout the United States, Oregon State and Health Science Institute, the and Delaware University of Delaware. And so that's just a little bit about the Center for Health Equity. I could probably spend the whole time talking about what we do there, but I just wanted to kind of highlight some of the projects that we do, just to kind of give you some idea. Currently we have probably five projects that come to mind. One we are doing with the Indiana Department of Health and their Division of Chronic Disease, Primary Care, and Rural Health, and we refer to that as the Disability and Health Project. We do trainings throughout the year and also convene a disability and health work group, which listens to reports, and they learn about initiatives that the Indiana Department of Health are doing, and then they give some feedback in terms of how they might be more attuned to disability issues within, larger issues that the state is facing, whether it's, diabetes, the smoking and tobacco use here in our state, those kind of issues. And we're also doing the Oral Health for Hoosiers projects, Hoosiers with Disabilities. And that's funded through the Indiana Governor's Council. And, you know, that's a project we've been doing for a few years now. We're really looking forward to, at this time, we're kind of convening two advisory committees to provide us some feedback and some insights on as we go forward and develop training materials for dental workforce professionals such as dentists, dental hygienists, and other office staff. And also we'll be developing oral health training for family caregivers and paid caregivers. And then we're doing the sexual health education for women with intellectual and developmental disabilities. That's again the project we've been doing now for a few years. I don't work on that one, so I don't know that much about it. I just know that it's a great need in our state, and I know that this project team has gotten a lot of, buy-in from the Self Advocates of Indiana, the ARC of Indiana, and other groups that want to see this project succeed. And one of the interesting projects I don't work on is the Indiana Disability History Project. That's a project that we've started when Dr. Phil Stafford was there at the Institute, and it's all built around collecting the oral history stories of people with disabilities in our state. I would encourage you to, if you want to visit that website, do a search for Indiana Disability History, and that'll probably take you right to the website. And that's has some fascinating stories of people that have who are people with disabilities in our state sharing the stories of, what their childhood was like growing up, even to, things that they're doing nowadays. And then finally, ADA Indiana. That's the project that I work on the majority of the time. And I will move into talking more specifically about that. And usually I would talk more about our partnership with the Great Lakes ADA Center, but you'll be hearing more from Peter Berg about the Great Lakes ADA Center. So, but I do want to tell you that, we are funded through the Indiana Governor's Council for People with Disabilities and the Great Lakes ADA Center. So we see ADA Indiana, this project, as a very, a good example of a collaboration between, the Disability Council in our state and the Great Lakes ADA Center, which is a regional based organization that serves several states in the Great Lakes area. But we've always had a great collaboration between these organizations and the Indiana Institute. And we do consider ourselves us, and Great Lakes considers us a state affiliate of the Great Lakes ADA Center. And it's not just us doing the project. We are led by a group of volunteers that we would call the ADA Indiana Steering Committee. And this is a group of 12 people. We just had someone recently leave our committee. And this is a group of volunteers, and they're representatives. We have state agencies. Our chair, Rick Edwards, he is the state ADA coordinator for the Indiana Department of Natural Resources. We have a couple of universities represented. We have a couple of local centers for independent living and the Indiana Statewide Independent Living Council. We have a lot of good representation also from just people with disabilities who are advocates and have a great interest in making sure that the Americans with Disabilities Act is promoted in our state. And that's kind of leads to, some of the questions I get. We do take calls, and people call us if they have an ADA question. And so one of the questions people might ask is, I want to file a complaint, against this or that. And I just, one of the things I like to differentiate, we're not the U.S. Department of Justice. We're not the U.S. Equal Opportunity Employment Commission. We're not here in our state, the Indiana Civil Rights Commission. We don't file complaints. We don't do any type of legal advocacy. What we do is, and Peter will talk more about the mission of the these regional ADA centers and their mission as they're funded through the federal government. But our mission for ADA Indiana is to serve as a statewide resource for promoting the implementation of the Americans with Disabilities Act in Indiana. And that's probably the, you know, the key thing to point out is that we promote voluntary compliance. And so we do that through a variety of ways, such as providing technical assistance on, you know, the Americans with Disabilities Act. I think today I came into the office, or I opened my screen up in my home office, and, you know, I had a couple of calls for people who are wanting to know about their rights under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Had a, you know, a farmer's market wanting to know about how the ADA applies to, you know, the farmer's market. They had some issues over the weekend. They want to know more about how to make their site compliant with the ADA. And so those are kind of questions that we take and provide information about the Americans with Disabilities Act to promote implementation and promote voluntary compliance. And we also provide, you know, training opportunities. We do an annual training event. We have a local community grants program. And we do exhibits and presentations, much like I'm doing this evening. But, you know, usually pre-COVID-19 pandemic, you know, we would be doing probably like maybe 3-4 conferences a year statewide. We were looking forward to doing your convention back in November. I'm sorry that that was canceled. You know, we do the Self-Advocates of Indiana. They have an annual conference. And so we look for opportunities to exhibit and share information about the Americans with Disabilities Act and promote free resources that are available to anyone to learn about the ADA, learn about their rights, learn about their obligations. And then we also do, we have the Indiana, ADA Indiana website, adaindiana.org. And that'll be available in my materials I'll share with Barbara. And we also have a Facebook. We do Twitter. We haven't got into Instagram or anything like that, but you know, feel free to follow us on Facebook or Twitter if those are things you do. And then you can always certainly give me a call at the Institute. You know, I'll provide my contact information to Barbara, and you can feel free to give me a call. I think I've had conversations with a couple of the people who are joining us this evening. And so a couple of the things, I just want to make sure that, oh, Peter Berg is online, so I'll just go ahead and finish up here.
Yes, and Matt.
Yes.
This is Barbara. Did you? I think you briefly mentioned the grant. You always have a grant period of time that people can submit grant proposals each year. And can you just very briefly talk about that?
Right. Let me go ahead. There's probably three things that we're doing that we're really excited about this project year. We do it on a year-to-year basis. And, you know, we were very glad to be able to, last year we put our annual ADA grants program. We didn't do it last year because of the COVID-19 pandemic. This year we went back to it, and, you know, we were confident that, you know, cities and organizations had, you know, COVID-19 policies and procedures in place. And so we were, this is an annual grants program that we do each year that's funded through our funding from the Indiana Governor's Council for People with Disabilities. This year we received 10 proposals, and we have a subcommittee of our steering committee members that they meet to discuss the proposals we've received. This year we had identified transportation and employment as our priorities for funding, but we certainly wouldn't have turned away anything that we thought was ADA related. And so we ended up funding two projects, one with Easter Seals Crossroads. They are going to be doing education for employers and individuals with disabilities through this one-day event that they're doing, and they're also going to be having a reverse job fair. So we're hoping that, you know, they'll provide a great training event for not only employers, but also teaching individuals about their rights under the Americans with Disabilities Act, all, you know, throughout the job application process when they're on the job. And then the other grant that we funded this year is a project that is based in Bloomington, the Council for Community Accessibility. They are doing the increasing transportation and mobility accessibility opportunities for all. So we're really looking forward to hearing more about this. This is our way of promoting training on the ADA that addresses a local need. And that's kind of always been the purpose of our ADA grants program. We actually call it the local community ADA implementation grants program. So. And then we have that every year. Usually we release the request for applications at the Indiana Governor's Council at their conference. That's now every 2 years. And so past couple of years, we haven't been able to do that, either because it's been canceled or because it fell on the off year. But we usually generally release it in December, and our steering committee meets in our February to do voting. And usually these projects will occur during the summer. And so I think, for instance, the city of Bloomington, they're going to be doing theirs in June. And then the Easter Seals Crossroads will be doing theirs in October. So we're really excited to hear how these two go. And then another exciting thing we're doing this year is our ADA Training Academy. And this is a project that we are doing, again, through some funding from the Indiana Governor's Council. It's we're going to be working with three community teams from Bloomington, Fort Wayne, and then Central Indiana. And what we're doing is we're trying to build the capacity of local communities to promote implementation of the ADA, specifically focus on the part of the ADA that covers local and state government. And so each one of these teams has an ADA coordinator, a person with a disability, and then another representative of a disability organization. And most of them are Centers for Independent Living. So on these teams, we have the Accessibility Center for Independent Living, which operates out of Indianapolis. We have the ADA coordinators for the City of Bloomington, City of Fort Wayne, Hamilton County Government, the City of Martinsville. We have other disability organizations such as Turnstone. And what these academy members will, what we'll be supporting them to do is to complete it's a training program offered through the Great Plains ADA Center, the ADA Coordinator Training Certification Program. And they'll be doing that by attending the National ADA Symposium and also by participating throughout the year in our ADA Indiana activities. So we're really excited to see. This is our first year doing this, and we're already excited about the response that we got, and we just think it's a great opportunity to kind of build the capacity of local communities around the Americans with Disabilities Act. And then ADA training, you know, we do a lot of great, Peter Berg will be talking about, you know, the training that is offered through the Great Lakes ADA Center. So we do a lot of promotion of their training, whether it's the Great Lakes ADA Center or other regional ADA centers in the ADA national network. But okay. we also do our own sponsoring of trainings. Earlier this month, we did a collaboration with the Indiana Association of ADA and Title VI Coordinators. We did a training with them for their membership and had a speaker talking about the ADA Title II Action Guide, which is a great online resource that really helps local communities kind of develop their ADA action plan and promote compliance from within their organization.
Okay.
And then feel free to visit our website, and I feel like I'm ready to turn it over to the main act. I'm the opening act, so
okay. Yeah. Well, thanks, Matt. And
no problem.
If anybody has any additional questions for Matt, I think it would be good for you to either email him, you could also call him, but. It's now about 7:35, and I want to get Peter in here as well. And we usually meet till 8 o'clock or so. And so I want to introduce Peter. And Peter, are you there?
I am here. Hi, Barbara.
Hey, Peter. And so all of many of us are familiar with Peter, and he's been active in some of our ACB conventions. And in particular, in 2018, he was our keynote and did an excellent job. And many of you will remember him. So, Peter, I'm going to leave it to you now to give us a little bit more information about the ADA, Great Lakes ADA Center. And so welcome. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Barbara, for inviting me. And Matt, thanks for facilitating this opportunity. I will definitely save time for questions at the end. I'm the project coordinator of technical assistance with the Great Lakes ADA Center. The Great Lakes Center is part of the federally funded ADA National Network. And some of the agencies that Matt has already mentioned, the National Network is funded by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Administration on Community Living, National Institute on Disability, Independent Living, and Rehabilitation Research. The National ADA Network is in its 30th year of operation. The ADA National Network is actually set forth in Title V of the ADA, which requires federal agencies to provide technical assistance to individuals, organizations, anyone with rights, responsibilities under the ADA. And the National Network was created as a non-federal entity to provide information. There were thoughts early on that employers, businesses, state, local governments may be reluctant to reach out to the Department of Justice, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the Department of Transportation to get technical assistance on the ADA, and is one of the reasons that the network was established. So there are 10 regional ADA centers across the country. The Great Lakes Center covers Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio, and Wisconsin. And we are housed in Chicago at the University of Illinois. We are located within the Department on Disability and Human Development. The Great Lakes Center is also part of the Institute, the Illinois Institute on Developmental Disabilities. And just like where Matt is located at Indiana University, the University of Illinois Chicago is the USID for the state of Illinois, which I think I've been there 20 years. And I think it stands for University Center on Excellent in Developmental Disabilities, but don't hold me to that. So the mission of the ADA National Network is to foster voluntary compliance of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And there are three core services that we provide to foster voluntary compliance. The first of which is technical assistance, which is just a fancy way of saying we answer questions. Back when the network was first established, that was primarily done by telephone. And as we have evolved in technology and so forth, we get more and more questions that are submitted online through the Great Lakes website, as well as the network has a national website. So we get questions through that. And then we get questions via email from people that have had contact with the center or with us individually previously. We also, second core service we provide is training. And even before the pandemic, the Great Lakes Center coordinates a number of free online webinar programs on behalf of the ADA National Network. And perhaps some of you have participated in one or more of those programs. The longest running educational program that the National Network provides is the ADA, the monthly ADA audio conference program. And this is a program that covers a variety of topics, changes from month to month. Upcoming in June, there will be a session on access to healthcare for individuals who are blind or experiencing vision loss. And one of the speakers for that session is ACB Ohio's own Katie Frederick. And you can find information for that by visiting the ADA audio conference page. And I will email all this information to Barbara so she can share that with you. And then we do a couple of other programs, Accessibility Online, which is a monthly collaboration between the network and the U.S. Access Board. That's the federal agency that creates design guidelines under the ADA and the ABA, the Architectural Barriers Act. They're the ones that also created the accessibility standards under Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act, which applied to the federal government. And then we do an ADA legal webinar program, which is designed for folks that have a level of knowledge of ADA, human resource attorneys, ADA coordinators, or folks that know more than, you know, just the basics of the ADA. And then we do an accessible technology webinar program, and then we also collaborate with the federal government, the U.S. Access Board, on a Section 508 webinar program, which is targeted towards Section 508 coordinators within federal agencies throughout the federal government. As well, we do trainings throughout the six states that we serve. Prior to the pandemic, we would travel quite a bit. We're a small staff. I think currently we have 7 full-time staff. Actually just brought on a new person as of April 1st, who is also an Indiana Hoosier. We stole her from your state. She still resides there, but now working for the Great Lakes ADA Center. But we still have a relatively small staff and a large geographic and a large population that we serve within the Great Lakes region. All of our trainings have gone online during the pandemic, and currently, like many businesses, universities, we're not allowed to travel anywhere to do any presentation, so they're all online. And then the final core service we provide is information dissemination, and we distribute materials that are created by the ADA National Network, by federal agencies, as well as other federal grantee projects. When I first started, we still used to send out a ton of print information through the mail. We would send out a lot of Braille and other forms of alternative formats, large print. This is an area where, again, as technology has developed and changed over the years, I think I've sent out two mailings in the past, maybe 6 to 9 months, just because so much information is now available electronically. So we will attach a document to an email and send it off to someone, or we'll paste the link in an email and send it off to folks to find that information. And then one of the other things that the National Network does is research. I think 10 years ago, about 10 years ago, our funding agency required the National Network to do research, because our direct agency is the National Institute on Disability, Independent Living, and Rehabilitation Research. So all of our other projects do research, and so that is something that we do. The research projects that the Great Lakes Center is focused on over this current funding cycle, one has been on employment and looking at employment levels, looking at employers and what their diversity inclusion plans are. And then we also did a project on public rights of way, which was a very interesting project where the researchers looked at communities, state, local government entities, one, to see if they even had a self-evaluation and transition plan for the public right of way, or if they even had, a self-evaluation. And then two, looking at the transition plan and looking at the quality of those plans and seeing if they were actually active and how well they were doing those. We did an audio conference with the folks from Phoenix, Arizona, it was either August or September. That's available in archive. And it was a really neat session with the researchers from Great Lakes. And then one of the participants in the research, it was the ADA coordinator and a technology person from the city of Phoenix, talking about their self-evaluation and their transition plan. It was an interesting session. So those are our core projects. And I will transition right from there to something that you may have seen in the news last week. The U.S. Department of Justice has filed to intervene in a lawsuit that was filed against the city of Chicago back in 2019 due to the lack of audible pedestrian signals at the over 2,000 intersections in the city of Chicago. Currently, there are a total of 15, that's correct, 15 intersections in the city of Chicago that currently have audible pedestrian signals. Prior to 2019, I was a member of a city task force, City of Chicago task force, that was looking at intersections and prioritizing which intersections should have APS installed. The city had received some federal dollars, and this list was drafted. It was finalized in July of 2019. Newly elected Mayor Lightfoot held an event at a press conference at the Chicago Lighthouse, announcing, you know, that 50 intersections were going to be have audible pedestrian signals installed, and a big great fanfare. And I want to say it was less than a week later, a lawsuit was filed against the city because they hadn't taken any action up until that time. And for whatever reason, the city at that point decided not to go forward with the 50 that they had already identified and had the funding for, and have let it sit. And the Dutchess Department became interested in this last year and now are intervening. I think the result will be good for people that are blind, have low vision, that live in visit, that either live or visit the city of Chicago, because I think it will result in a settlement agreement that will require the installation of audible pedestrian signals at more than the 50 that the city was originally targeting. The city doesn't have much of a defense or, you know, in the situation, because they don't have a self-evaluation or a transition plan for the public right away. So I think they're going to have trouble defending their inaction in that area. Other thing that I want to talk about, and I'm sure a lot of you are aware of, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in the Winn-Dixie case overturned last week and sent back to the lower court. This case, this was the, I think it was the first case that went to trial and had a verdict. And in that case, an individual had filed suit against Winn-Dixie because he was unable to place reorders for his prescription medications on the Winn-Dixie website. And the lower district court judge had ruled in favor of the plaintiff and said that, yes, that Winn-Dixie was in violation of the ADA. And Winn-Dixie appealed that decision. And what's unfortunate with this 11th Circuit, which only covers, and only because it's, you know, it's only Alabama, Georgia, and Florida, but the appeals court, it was a 2-1 decision in favor of Winn-Dixie. They took the most strict interpretation of the definition of a place of public accommodation under the ADA. So they took the position simply that the ADA was passed and signed into the law prior to the creation of the internet and websites, and that the definition of places of public accommodation in the Americans with Disabilities Act only applies to brick and mortar facilities, brick and mortar buildings. You know, that is different than other circuits around the country. We've had circuits like in the Ninth Circuit, which covers California, Washington, I think Oregon, several states out west, I think Arizona as well. That circuit has taken the position that the ADA applies to websites of businesses. And then there are circuits where there's an in-between. They're in the middle. I don't know which circuits these are, but there are circuits that have taken the position that the ADA applies to websites of businesses only to the extent that goods are available on the website that are also available in their brick and mortar store locations. So if a business is selling something in their brick and mortar location and it's also available online, then the ADA applies. If it's only available on their website and not at the brick and mortar location, the ADA doesn't apply. Last year, or maybe in the year before, Domino's had appealed a Ninth Circuit court ruling, and the Supreme Court declined to take up that case. You know, one of two things, or I'm not an attorney, but one of two things, you know, needs to happen at this point. I haven't seen whether or not the Winn-Dixie case is going to be appealed to the Supreme Court. You know, the Supreme Court needs to take up a ADA website case because that's where you see many cases that go before the Supreme Court, is where you have split decisions amongst the circuit in order to unify and have federal legislation mean the same thing in every single state and territory. So that's either going to have to take place, or the Department of Justice is going to have to engage in rulemaking on accessible technology and websites. The previous the Obama administration had a final rule in front of the Office of Management and Budget in the last year of that administration. That rule was pulled back and was subsequently not put forward. And the previous administration took a step back and said that we're not going to do any rulemaking on websites under the ADA. Now, the Justice Department all along under the Trump administration, the Obama administration, the Bush administration has always taken the position that the ADA, in fact, does apply to websites. It applies the effective communication obligations of the ADA to websites of state and local governments and private businesses. However, the Justice Department has not taken a position in saying if you follow WCAG, the Worldwide Accessibility, guidelines, that you'll be compliant and have no ADA issues. So it's really where we need to see some rulemaking in that particular area. So those were the two big things I wanted to mention, Barbara. We got about 10 minutes prior to the top of the hour, so I'll be happy to pause here and yes, ask questions. If folks can reach out to me directly as well.
Yes, and you've covered a lot of territory. Does anyone have any questions? And again, to unmute yourself, it's *6 on your phone or on your iPhone. Also, to find your your mute button, it's in the very, very lowest corner, left-hand corner of your cell phone. And you can also raise your hand. We don't have a huge group, so we can probably just, if you recognize yourself or call my name, then I can recognize you to ask a question. So do we have any questions for Peter?
Barbara, Pat has her hand raised.
Okay, Pat?
I'm going to try to do this in two sentences because it's complicated. Those on the call, forgive me. Mr. Norris, Mr. Berg, I've reached out to Mr. Norris. I'm going to be vague on purpose because this is recorded. A certain medical group of maybe 200 offices had decided that people who do not have smartphones or cannot use webcams, and many blind people, even those with Macs and Windows computers, do not have a webcam, cannot do telehealth. I have been declined. I'm reaching out to area agencies on aging. We need data. I turned in the group to the Centers for Disease Control last weekend, as they are not cooperating with the pandemic, which is why the telehealth provisions were expanded in 2020. The language, if you are turned down, these are Medicare regs. Simple phone without video capability. That, to me, grandfathers in a lot of things, and the ADA was written before iPhones and Androids. Okay. So I'm just letting both of you know where things stand. I'm done.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
We filed a complaint with the Office of Civil Rights within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Thank you, Peter.
It's an issue under both Titles 2 and 3 of the ADA, as well as under the Affordable Health Care Act.
Yes. And I will mention here, I didn't know that Katie was doing that in June. That's very interesting. The joint convention of Ohio and Indiana this fall is taking sort of a dual track for our theme of accessible, of exercise and health and accessible equipment. So I'm wondering, how is that addressed at all in the standards or regulations for accessible exercise equipment and medical equipment, like home equipment that you would use, accessible equipment?
Sure. The ADA accessibility standards, which are known as the 2010 standards for accessible design, apply to the built environment. So anything that is affixed to a building or facility, turn the building upside down, Whatever remains is covered by the ADA standards. Back on the 20th anniversary of the ADA, the Obama administration had published four advanced notices of proposed rulemaking, and one of those was on furniture and equipment. Nothing has gone forward with that, but that's where that would have to be addressed, the equipment and furniture. It's currently not covered. And while the ADA standards, while they were updated back in 2012, to include accessibility requirements within fitness centers, it only requires that at least one of each type of exercise equipment be located on an accessible route. That, as I said, there are no accessibility requirements for the equipment itself. Whether you're a person with a mobility disability, you'd have to transfer onto a piece of equipment, and there's no requirement for speech output on those pieces of equipment.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And we were also going to be talking about accessible in-home health equipment. That we're going to be talking about that at our state convention this year. Are there any other questions for Peter?
I only charge $10 a question.
Any comments or questions? So
I don't believe that you've talked about the webinars that you guys have. I get emails about those. I don't know if other people are aware of them or not.
The webinars, the webinars?
Yeah, the audio conference, accessibility online, the ADA legal, those are all free. They're accessible. We use Zoom, which is a wonderful platform for accessibility, especially for folks that use assistive technology screen readers. Matt Norris is the premier promoter of the webinars that Great Lakes does, as well as all of the other ADA centers across the network. So if you want to find out what's going on, check out ADA Indiana's social media, Facebook and Twitter. Matt is very, very active in providing information.
Okay, very good.
And those are all free. And if you're someone that works in a industry where you need continuing education units, we offer certificates of attendance for all of the sessions. And many individuals use those and turn those in. So if they, you know, are a social worker or even, a rehabilitation instructor, oftentimes folks turn that into their accrediting agency for credits. And then one other thing I mentioned real quick, Barbara, the ADA, the National ADA Symposium is back this year. Last year it was canceled. There's an in-person ADA Symposium that's taking place in Phoenix. It's either the third week or last week of July. And then there's a virtual symposium that's taking place the first week of August. Great Lakes, once again, this year will be providing a limited number of scholarships to individuals that reside in the Great Lakes region. We will be getting that application information posted to our website sometime this week, and I will let Matt and Barbara know so that if you have an interest in attending that the symposium, you can do so. For anyone that has interest in the ADA coordinator training program, you would need to attend the sessions that are being offered as part of the symposium. So the scholarship covers the registration costs for either the in-person or the virtual ADA symposium that's upcoming later this summer.
Okay. We're coming up on 8:00, but if anybody has any questions, I would like for you to go ahead and ask them. And I have one more. So if you can unmute yourself. Very quickly, Peter, I'm assuming that all the ADA regions, each one offer the same programming as the Great Lakes ADA region, correct? All of them offer the same, have the same offerings, or do they have different?
We all offer the same core services, technical assistance, training, and information dissemination.
Okay. All right. Okay, so does anyone else have any questions? Okay, and I will say that that the Transportation Mobility Committee that I chair received that grant this year here in Bloomington. So we're going to be doing a pedestrian project here in June, looking at the environmental access issues for pedestrian accommodations. And we're going to have an event in June, and we'll be using funds from the ADA Indiana grant project. So it's a great project. All right. So thank you, Peter.